from the campus of Gonzaga University in Spokane, Washington. You're listening to the G Suite Podcast, where we discuss all things Zag business.
Today's guest is Brian Newberry, the CEO of Girl Scouts of Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. Prior to his appointment, he served as an executive director of Leadership Spokane, a diverse community of youth and adult leaders seeking to build a stronger community. He also was the commander of the 92nd Air Refueling Wing, serving military and humanitarian operations throughout the globe. As an adjunct professor in the MBA program, Ryan is a graduate of the U.S. Air Force Academy and a recipient of the Bronze Star.
Well, thank you, Brian, for being with us today. We're so excited to talk to you about servant leadership and your work as the CEO of the Girl Scouts of Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. So could you just tell us a little bit about your journey and what inspired you to lead an organization focused on empowering girls?
Sure. I mean, to be honest, I never would have imagined that I would be here 10 years ago. It's now a long time ago, but I was a base commander and I was in charge of all things dealing with protecting this nation and all the other incredible mission sets that are out at Fairchild. And to say that a decade later, I would be dealing with a lot of glitter and a lot of pink unicorns, I never would have imagined it. And pretty early on into my time here, I was like always reflecting back. And when I see Fairchild going through the exercises that they have, I go, wow, my world has really changed and what my perspective is. So I never saw this coming, not in a million years. How I got here is just an odd course of events, but it's how life is. Sometimes people just ask the question. And for me, the service part is huge. And I don't have any daughters. I have two sons, both were Eagle Scouts. So I had some familiarity with scouting. But for Girl Scouts, my only familiarity was Thin Mints. And that's my that's my cookie of choice. And so
mine too.
I'm all about Thin Mints. And There was a period of time where I was deployed overseas in 2011. I was over there for 366 days and I counted every day because I missed my family. My kids were in junior school, junior middle school and high school. And I just was really, really missing them. And I was feeling homesick in the December timeframe because that's when we are homesick for our families is over the holidays. And I was a group commander. So I was in charge for a decent amount of people. And a girl, oddly enough, because I was stationed in Washington, D.C., but a Girl Scout, oddly enough, from Spokane, Washington, who was went to Lewis and Clark High School, did a service project where she set a care package over to us. I got in December and what was in the bottom of it, it was a Thin Mint package. And that Thin Mint package I pulled out and it reminded me that it was more about the calories. It was really more about Americana because Girl Scouts and Americana go together like Thin Mints and milk. And I just was really, really excited. And I felt bad about how homesick I was. And so I went out and I took those Thin Mints and I shared it with the base perimeter guards who have a tough time out there. It was in Kyrgyzstan. And the homesickness didn't go away, but it got put into a different compartment. And Colonel Newberry came back into life. And I started leading better again. I started not being focused on myself. And so that Girl Scout made a difference for Colonel Newberry. Fast forward to I finished my time in the military. I retired. I was serving with Leadership Spokane here, which has a great partnership with Gonzaga. Really, really appreciate the partnership with Gonzaga. I had done a tour there for years. And I had always said that I always had a higher, bigger horizons for something bigger. Leadership Spokane is a great organization, but it's pretty small. And I said I'd be there 3 to 5 years. And the 4-year mark, Girl Scouts came a knocking. And there was someone on the board who just said, you know, you have a penchant for really being into the youth leadership program. Do you want to consider doing Girl Scouts? And I said, love it. Thin Mints. Stop. Let's do it.
I got to pause you right there. Yeah. Tagalog is a superior. Okay.
It's a good cookie.
That's,
I'll give you that.
American.
It's only number three, huh?
It's number three after Samoas.
Oh, of course.
Samoas and Thin Mints go head to head. They're just like, And yeah, it's always really close. But yes, tags are close, and I will grant you that. Tags are right there. We have to have those three on the big three lineup to make a cookie sale success. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, there's a problem. I'm a guy, you know, so I didn't really think much of it. And they said, you know, there are other things. And plus, you know, we think you'd be great to come and interview. So went through the whole interview process and was selected. It was a very transparent process for me because I really didn't hold back. I said, if the culture's not to accept Ryan, I get it. I understand. I'm a guy. And I think there's a role for a lady to be in charge of Girl Scouts. I came in, it was difficult. If we have time at the end, we can talk about some of the challenges I faced. But right now, it was difficult for me in the first 6 months, year. The board didn't necessarily have the same view as the volunteers or the Girl Scouts. But long story short, to me, it's about servant leadership. I was there to serve the girls. I put on about 24,000 miles a year traveling all over this council to be on the front line for girls and for their volunteers. It is volunteer appreciation this week, and I've done a lot to thank our volunteers. And so with that, that's how I got here. I didn't quite understand the need for it back then for girls. Now I fully do. We're one of the few organizations that stands up for girls. And I think more than ever in this time of rising crime rates, social media challenges, the drug use, I think that girls need a safe space to see girls. And I never see it better than when I go out to camp and see girls do the last night campfire and they do all their skits. They're themselves. And Girl Scouts provides that cocoon, or Girl Scouts can be Girl Scouts, can be girls. And so I am a man, but I help facilitate an environment where girls can be girls. And I think it's needed more than ever. So I appreciate you asking. Mm-hmm. I think it's ultimately about service. For me, I never would have thought 10 years ago that being in service in girls would be so fulfilling, but I will always be an airman's commander. That was who I served. Today, I am a girls commander, and I couldn't find a better team to serve than girls.
That's wonderful. And I remember being at Sweets before supper, and remind me, how many boxes of Girl Scouts were donated year?
That's the power of talking about a good thing. This year, that's actually a really good news story. Our cookie sale, thank you for everyone out there in Podland who bought cookies from us. We appreciate it. We had one of the better seasons comparatively to the rest of the nation. It was down this year. We were 3% down. But the one huge bright light for Girl Scouts this year was our troop to troop donations. And that's where you give a box and then we get it out to military. This Sunday, there's a Heroes Walk. There's a Heroes Walk in Riverfront Square where military families are coming on out, and I'll have volunteers being handing out cookies. But nearly 42,000 boxes were donated for U.S. military. Mm-hmm. And just talking about it, when I came in, we were a very gracious organization, 12,000 boxes. But I came in and I gave stories about how I was served by a Thin Mint box back in 2011. Girls listen, volunteers listen. And that power went from 12,000 boxes to 24,000 boxes to 35,000 boxes. Last year, we were 39,000. We had one other year that we were at 42. And this year, we're just shy of 42. So that was, I think what is giving me so much hope this year is that we're slightly off 3%. It's not the end of the world, but it's certainly not a record that we set. But usually when consumers buy less, they give less. Some way, somehow, consumers bought less for me, but they gave more to charity, i.e. our service members overseas. And so last year, we were able to get cookies to Iraq. In February, we were able to get them into the middle of Iraq. I got cookies to a submarine. They were waterproof cookies. That was a good feat that we did. We got cookies twice to Korea. Korea was high demand, and they did serve like tag-alongs. The base in Korea loved tag-alongs, and we got cookies out to Poland as the Ukraine war was kicking off. So it is a great program. It's a good thing where if you just don't feel like buying a box of cookies for yourself, you can say, I just want to serve the troops. Let me do it.
I think the online sales kind of sets it up for that too, mm-hmm. because the last Girl Scout board that I was on, I would give out the little patches that said, mm-hmm. you know, I met a board member, and any girl that sent me their link or I met in person, mm-hmm. I just couldn't get that many boxes for myself. Mm-hmm. So I would just donate one to whatever organization they were pairing with.
Yeah, exactly.
And the minimum online sales too, I think is 4 or 5 boxes, depending, right? So
for delivery,
yeah. For delivery, yeah.
And there are some organizations. One of the troops adopted Make-A-Wish in Idaho. Others do other things. So there is a variety of what you can give for, and the Girl Scouts advertise it. But the bulk of our giving goes to first responders and military.
That's wonderful.
Hmm. I have a random question for you.
Go.
Do you know Tom Krasinski? He was Air Force JAG. Probably some of the same time you were at Fairchild.
But. No, I don't. If he's a JAG, the name seemed familiar, but the fact that there's not many JAGs, I don't know him in that fashion, so I don't think so. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no.
It is a big Air Force, but I remember JAGs. You don't have to know the lawyers in your life.
For sure.
Well, you started to talk about it, but I would love to know more about what the girls in our community are facing and maybe some of the ways that Girl Scouts can help overcome some of those issues.
For me, it's all about confidence. And so I started to tell you how I fell in love with Girl Scouts. And my son is an Air Force officer as well, and he's doing well out there. He's an instructor pilot down in Oklahoma. And as I watched him, and he's following his dad's footsteps, he's flying in the same airplane, and hopefully he has a successful career as well, and he loves the Air Force. But as I watched him develop, he kind of unfortunately fell under the shadow of growing up, seeing when he was in high school, Colonel Newberry as base commander. When you're out at the base and you're a wing commander, it's a big deal. Your picture is in every building. It's kind of disgusting. And you're just like, so for your kid to see that, it's like crazy. And so he went off to college seeing Colonel Newberry. And so in his first couple of years of being an officer, he just had this huge lack of confidence mm-hmm. on his shoulder because he, and I felt so bad because I caused it, not intentionally, but we love our kids. And he saw Colonel Newberry after 20 years of service and doing all these things. He never saw Lieutenant Newberry. He never saw Captain Newberry. And so I was just like, Mark, be confident. You are who you are. You're a good kid. You've done good things. Don't doubt yourself so much. My point of that getting to Girl Scouts is confidence matters. He's got his rhythm. He's got his confidence. He's out flying high for the Air Force, and I'm proud of him. But what that lesson taught me in the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years is the power of confidence to make a difference. So we teach courage, confidence, and character to make the world a better place. But of those, confidence to me is the one that I so work hard on with my programmers and anyone that engages with my girls to do that. So we do rock climbing, we do STEM activities, we send them all over the world. They're able to earn cookie dough via their cookie sales. We just had girls go over to Europe here recently the spring. We just had a few girls go to Costa Rica. Another set of girls go down to Savannah, which is the birthplace of our founder, Julia Gordon Lowe. So we have girls go around the world. That's one way to gain confidence, is you get a different perspective out there. But another is just doing things. And so most of our programming is doing things that you hadn't done. But that's why I believe in this program so much, because it does give confidence. And we really work hard on STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, because I think girls should do whatever they want to do. But when we expose girls at a younger age to STEM activities, they're 20 points more likely to do it at an older age. So whether they go into medicine, whether they go into engineering, whatever the case may be, we just need diversity in this great world of ours. Our challenges are more than they ever have been, and we just need more minds at the table to figure that, and girls should be, ladies should be at the table. So I teach confidence, and my counsel teaches confidence, and we teach courage and character as well. We talked about some of the things and way we do courage and character as well. And so that's what I'm all about, is I think that girls need that help. The other thing that's really special about Girl Scouts is because you support our cookie sales, i.e. the public, it enables us to allow girls to have financial aid. So we last year gave over $30,000 in financial aid for girls to go to camp. Camp is the single biggest way that girls get confidence out in the outdoors. We have two camps. One is, we have many camps because service units, which are all through the council, do their local camps. So we're spread out all through Eastern Washington, mountains this way, all the way up from Lewiston, Moscow, up to the Canadian border. So we're everywhere. We have service camps going on as well. But our two council-led camps are here in the Spokane Center, which is about a mile over your back shoulder. And then that's a day camp that happens all during the summer. And then the other one is out on Lake Coeur d'Alene, Camp Four Echoes. And that's a resident camp out there that serves girls from brownies on up all the way to senior. But being a week in the forest, canoeing, kayaking, ropes course, we have a high ropes course up there where you're suspended high up off the ground, all those things give confidence to our girls. And so that's what we're built to do. But back to the financial aid piece, Girl Scouts and the support of the cookie sales allows me to give that camp to girls who may or may not be able to afford it. And that's a gift that we're able to do. And we also have a program in 10 different schools around here, including our high school, called Go Getters, which is an after school program, also supported by cookie sales and the community, like Johnston Fix Foundation and The Zone and Wells Fargo and other grantors, that allows us to give Girl Scouts to free to girls who couldn't afford it. So our biggest challenge, and I don't think this is a surprise to you where your location is the socioeconomics of our council. Whether it be in Spokane or you name it, a town anywhere out there, there's not a lot of hidden wealth. And girls need opportunity. And I think every girl needs to have a chance to learn how to be a leader, how to develop that confidence. And that's what Girl Scouts can provide, is we can provide it whether you pay for it, i.e. $25 a year, it's going up to $45 a year next year, or and that's a national mandate on dues. It's not my choice. Or you can get financial aid that allows you to get it for whatever you need to do to get into it. Because we want every girl to be at our table. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. Doesn't matter what your demographics are. We need more girls in this world, making the world a better place, who understand courage, confidence, and character. And so we believe in it. And so I really focus on that confidence so that the girls can overcome the challenges in this community, the social media that's always bagging them down because they're not getting all the likes that they need to, and other things like that, keeping them away from crime, keeping them away from the drug scene out there. That's why I think this is needed more than ever in our community. Mm-hmm.
I see that a lot in just the little interaction you had with my niece, who's a Girl Scout, when we stumbled upon your class.
Yeah.
And you gave her your patch, and it was purple and it had a unicorn on it. And she could not stop talking about that interaction, you know, nearly seven. And she just, you filled her with confidence.
Yeah.
So, and I think you just told her, like,
don't make the world a better place. Yeah.
It's just exactly. That little moment, that little spark.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So was there ever like a spark for you or an initial starting point that inspired you to take up all these leadership roles and your leadership journey?
You know, I've always, I mean, my parents, I have a family history of military. My dad was in the military. He didn't serve in Vietnam, but he served in that era. He served over in Europe during the Vietnam War. He was retired military as well. So I grew up in that family. My family history actually goes back to the Revolutionary War. And I had family members in Civil War. And I always was struck that I had a family member, Newberry family, who was killed in the Battle of New Jersey. And it was a small battle. And it was, but George Washington was there. And I always just feel inspired that there was someone in my family that was in the presence of George Washington, even if it was on his last day. So that service element via the military has been part of me, and it's just been baked in from my parents and just who I was. It certainly has grown over time because I see the power of servant leadership. When you serve others, when you give from the heart, the dividends are just so much more. And I also learned about the power of encouragement. The world belongs to an encourager, all those things growing on up. I work really hard as a male CEO, and my time is limited in this capacity. I do think there's a time and a place for a woman CEO to be their inspiration. So at some point that I need to move on. But while I'm here, I definitely think that I need to be a positive male influence for those girls. And as I walk across the gym during day camp or where the case may be, there's a lot of girls that reach out to me across the way. Hey, Brian, how's it going? and they need that affirmation. And so I really work hard to give it to each and every girl that wants my affirmation to say, I do believe in you. And I do. That's why I stopped Free Your Niece, because she does matter. And she didn't know me, but I knew it would have an impact on her. And so, but I learned that from those role models. And so we're all role models for those around us. And it's really, really powerful. I recently got a letter from someone that I served with in the Pentagon. He was a Coast Guard person, Ryan Manning. And he sent me a letter, and he went off to be a captain in the Coast Guard, which is equivalent of a colonel. And he did quite well, but he just retired. And he sent me a letter, and he was so nice. And it just said, thank you for the influence that you had on me when we served together in the Pentagon. You were my boss. And I just appreciate how you cared for others. And I try to bring that forward. I need to do that. And I keep saying this, I got the letter like 2 months ago. I need to do that with my former bosses, because they were the ones who taught me that. Colonel Colin Flynn was an ops group commander out of Omaha, Nebraska, off at Air Force Base. And I just remember one night we were doing an alert deployment where we were taking an airplane away because there was bad weather coming and we had to survive the airplane. And it was freezing and snow and everything you can think about in February. And there sat my group commander just watching us, and he invited me over. He's like, come into the car, get warm, use this little cell phone that was like 12 inches long, because we had cell phones in the 2000 timeframe, a 1998 timeframe. But him taking his time out, someone, it's a captain, he's way up the chain, coming on out to watch me, it just said, man, that's how I need to be. So I tried to be that for my girls. I picked up trash outside their building, all that kind of stuff, because I just feel like I need to role model to everybody. So I don't know what the initial stuff, but it's a series of influences that have come together to let me know that as I finish out my life, that I just need to be an example to others, that to serve is to give, just like the Jesuit that this university teaches. You'll set the world on fire by your acts of service.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Let's pivot to your class here at Gonzaga. And you can tell us a little bit about the class, what you teach, but specifically how you're incorporating your leadership philosophy into that role.
So it's a quick class, and it's always the popular weekend class, especially on Sundays. Everyone's just so enthralled to be there. It's a business leadership class. I really haven't changed it much. It effectively says that business is business. I mean, that leadership is leadership. And so my first day, it's kind of like military leadership, what I learned. I'm kind of distant from the military now, being a decade out, but back when I started this class around 2016, I was only 4 years out. So it was much more close to me. But the first day I talk about the military leadership principles, and then sometime in the first day's afternoon, I pivot over to business leadership principles. And then the second day I finish up, and it's got a lot of experiential learning. There's exercises because people do not want to be there in the weekend. So death by PowerPoint only goes so far. There is a little bit of death by PowerPoint, but there's other stuff too. But I just try to, at the end of the day, and I emphasize this from the start, that leadership is leadership. Whether you're out on a battlefield, whether you're in the business network, or whether you're in a charity, nonprofit work, leadership is leadership. And so that's kind of what I teach. And I just take them on a journey, and then I infuse the servant leadership. I do have a section on the end of the first day that goes deep dive into servant leadership and the 10 characteristics of servant leadership, which Gonzaga is one of the best principles about that. And I do talk to them about that. I talk to them about the fact that you all have a relationship with Howard Behar, that your School of Leadership Studies has a strong connection to Greenleaf. And so I talk about all those different things with them. But I infuse the servant leadership through my stories, my military stories and my business stories on that. And this is kind of very poignant for me. I wasn't able to be here this week, sadly, because I was at a Girl Scout conference. But on Wednesday, you all had a memorial. I don't know, was it well publicized for Shane Barnes? Did you hear about it?
I saw it.
Okay.
And I saw there was, his family was over at Jack and Dan's in the back room after. And I talked to some folks. I'm told it was pretty powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, I sent a Girl Scout volunteer to represent, and I gave some Americana scarf, Girl Scout scarf and patches for mom and daughter, and daughter was a brownie. Mm-hmm. It's killing me. So Shane Barnes, for those who don't know, he was a Gonzaga Bulldog ROTC graduate, graduated circa 2011-12, about the time that I showed up into Spokane. So it was before my time that I ever had a chance to meet him. Went off and served in the Army. But the consequential thing about Shane Barnes is the fact that he got to a point where he was rising in rank and he was not going to be in the cockpit anymore. And so Shane Barnes said, I want to serve on the front lines. I want to be there for my troops. I don't want to go become an administrative officer. So it became what was called a chief warrant officer, which means that he can still stay flying the helicopter, which is great. But there's two things that he did when he did that. One, he's basically capping his rank. Chief warrant officer is great, but it's not major, it's not colonel, it's not general. So he's capping his rank. And the second thing, he's capping his income. He's capping his income as well, because there is a differential. So he chose to do that, so as to serve on the front line still. He lost his life in a helicopter accident a year ago, November, and there was a ceremony here where they were remembering his service before self. And it was this Wednesday, and I did miss it. I'm very sad that I did, but I heard good things about it as well. But way to go, Gonzaga, honoring its military. And Dr. McCullough is retiring here soon, but you have one of the best Bulldog ROTC detachments out there. And the other thing that I really appreciate about ROTC here is Gonzaga ends up helping pay for the board. You have room and board for ROTC cadets as well. My son went to ROTC at University of Michigan, and we did not get any room and board. And so Gonzaga goes the extra mile for its military. So God bless Gonzaga for doing that. But the final thing on servant leadership for my class, and I always bring up Shane Barnes as one of the examples about for Gonzaga, is you have him in your DNA. He is part of your DNA. You produced him, but he also gave back in how he led his life. And he had a comment. He had a comment and quote, and I don't have it in front of me right now, but he basically said, way back when, 10 years ago, I just want to go out and serve the world. I want to do the best I can to help those who need help. And he did it. And he gave his life in a helicopter accident over the Mediterranean Sea. But he lived his life more than most in doing sacrifice and wanting to be there for his troops. That's true servant leadership. So if stories like those that I end up on in the class that I just say, good zags, you got it going on here. Keep being leaders. That's why I teach the class. It's not for the small pension that we get from it. I teach it because I want more zags to understand how powerful they can be when they go out in the world and set the world on fire.
That's amazing. You know, I teach a principles of management course. And so a couple of my students were in your weekend class this semester, and I taught servant leadership the day before. I think it was the Thursday before your class.
Oh,
and so they got a little precursor on like who Robert Greenleaf was and his model, but they got to see the deep dive in the application from you. And they said the nicest things about your class.
They really
enjoyed the activities.
I too try to keep them up. And we had the basketball game. So thankful this time you obviously but you were playing it. You ended up losing, I think, the game, but it was to Houston, right? It was to Houston. So thankful that game was at 8 o'clock that night, which was 5 o'clock our time, because I've been like, I was like, no one would have been paying attention. So anyway, thank goodness they scheduled it outside my class.
Yeah, we have to figure out what to do when the Zags are playing.
I know, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. That's fine if you have a laptop. I'm not going to look at what you're going to do.
Yeah. And that's what's happening.
As long as keep me updated on the score. That's all.
Exactly.
So you've kind of mentioned leadership is leadership. Mm-hmm. But do you think that servant leadership in particular ends up being in more community-based or nonprofit, more so than maybe other types of other organizations?
I do. And leadership is leadership, and the principles of vision, the principles of having the team come together to be greater than themselves, all that stuff is in every leadership theory out there. But there is autocratic leadership, which sounds bad on its face, but sometimes that's what leadership is. It's like, go do this because I said so. And then sometimes it's necessary in life. And then there's democratic leadership. We'll kind of talk about it. And then there's lazy fair leadership. We're kind of like, we're not sometimes sure who is the leader of the group, but someone's kind of leading. So there's all those kind of leadership styles that are out there. There's not one style that fits all. And at different times it did. But servant leadership to me is more I say it's more like the sunglasses that you wear. It's the perspective that you bring, and you can be a servant leader and still be autocratic sometimes in the ways that you do things. If the ultimate goal of your autocratic nature with your leadership is because you are serving the people, that's how it is. But servant leadership, this is, you know, we can't spend the whole time on getting into the depths of servant leadership, but I do think that servant leadership is a very powerful tool that when it's applied correctly, it ends up, again, the dividends come back fivefold, because when people feel like they're being served, they just really show up to the fight and they really give back with all their heart and soul. And that's really where you see that payback. But to a mission-centered organization, to a nonprofit out there, you're already set to be serving. It's rare that you hear nonprofits saying, oh, we're overpaying our employees, or, oh, we're doing too much for people. You're always working from the fight, from the back, because it's just really hard to do quote-unquote charity work in some cases. And so you're already doing that kind of work. So if you can feel like you're serving those that you lead, then I feel like it's going to work out. And I think that you just have to have a passion to do it. There's a lot of people in Girl Scouts who, I'm not necessarily saying that they're servant leaders. It just has to be something where you have to realize who you're serving. And that perspective, it's not that they're doing bad work. It's just that to be a servant leader, you have to deploy the 10 servant leadership characteristics, or at least some of them. And some of them are like listening. Some of them are healing. Some of them are like persuasion. All these different things that might not be part of your toolkit. Empathy is a huge one. Mm-hmm. Empathy is one of my strongest characteristics. And when I was a base commander, how did I get empathy? I went out and I once a month did something with an airman out there. I changed engines. I counted bullets. I sewed parachutes. I'm not a good sewer, but I learned that day. I did all these things because I was trying to better understand what my airmen were going through. And then at the end of the day, I would send a letter, take a picture with the airmen and send a letter to their mom and say, Airman Smith is doing such an incredible job for America. You should be so proud of them. And that kind of buy-in just helps you get so much further down. But I would say the same thing for mission work. It is a perspective that you can still do, be a good nonprofit leader. You don't have to be a servant leader, but if you can be a servant leader, it helps. But you also have to figure out who you serve. And so in the airline industry, sometimes I sit there and I think, who does the airline serve? Well, they serve the customers. We can debate that point, but that's for another podcast as well. But Southwest in its heyday, when it was truly a great servant leadership organization, it served its staff. Mm-hmm. And it was not union based, and it was doing things different for its staff. And that's it. I think that's broken down a little bit, and they have changed over time as a business leader on that. Mm-hmm. Who does Girl Scouts serve? We serve our girls. There's no doubt about it. But what I have brought to the organization is there is no one greater than your volunteers. There is no one greater than those 1,500 volunteers. Because if you don't get the volunteers to stand up and to care for the girls, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So we do serve the girls, but I have really focused for my staff to make sure you're serving the volunteers, and then you will serve the girls. So if you're a mission-based organization and you can lock in to who you need to serve, I mean, it could potentially be the folks on the street who need the help, or a soup kitchen. It could be those, but it could be someone else. If you can figure out who that is and direct your energy to that, that's going to propel you that much further down the way. Because when you serve the right need, it's going to happen. You're going to succeed.
Yeah, I love that. I think Greenleaf's talked about, like, servant leaders have this natural desire to be of service to others. Right. And if you don't have that, then you're not engaging in it. But also he talked about kind of the ripple effect that, yeah, we have to help people grow and be wiser and freer and more autonomous, right, and healthier. But we also have to help the community. There needs to be this ripple effect of whatever we're doing uplifts everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
And I stress that to your students very much. It's a great point. I stress it to them. Everyone, you can ask everyone, like, especially politicians, stop. Are you a servant leader? And they're all going to say, yeah, I am. It's so good. I am. But you can watch. And again, I can watch. And not everyone is a servant leader. You just have to see where their heart is and where their heart truly is. And that's where it's at. And again, it's not a bad thing not to be a servant leader. It's just, if you are a servant leader, be a servant leader, and you are going to, you're going to make a difference with heart in so many other ways that you didn't expect.
It's funny that you mentioned that. I have a colleague that I've published a lot about leadership with, and he does far more than I do, but he is hesitant to always call himself a servant leader, mm-hmm. even though that's exactly what he is, because he feels like people throw the term around in a way that they're not really servant leaders, but mm-hmm. they want to like portray themselves as such.
Right.
And so he was like, I hate to like label myself that. And then people think that I am just a facade. Right. But yeah, I think leadership in general, so many things get labeled leadership that are not leadership.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
My son, I think he's turning into my older son. I have a younger son who's with the State Department, and he's doing good things as well. He does have confidence, which has helped him out tremendously. I think my older son is a servant leader, but I haven't, like, to your point, I haven't like said, Mark, you're a servant leader, but
right.
at some point I need to start emphasizing, he needs to bring it up, because I do think it's something that is kind of not talked about as much. We're in a phase in America right now where servant leadership isn't being talked about as much as it was in the past. And I'm glad that your school is staying focused on it, but it is a term that makes a difference, whether it be in Starbucks or whether it means in your house.
If I'm someone who's interested in being, taking on a role similar to yours, or ultimately taking on a role similar to yours, what advice would you give them if they want to sit down and have a cup of coffee? Pick your brain.
So you're talking about kind of being a nonprofit leader. Is that what you're kind of talking about?
When you say a mission-based organization or organization with impact, that's not just looking maybe to sell a product or
right. I would say what's happened in this world, and this is kind of get into a generational pitch. I think what's happened into our world with technology, I mean, I do give the generational discussion to the students. It's a real brief part of one of my surveys. You know, when I grew up, I didn't have Google. I didn't have the cell phone, and I ended up learning from my boss. That's who I learned from. And now the way the world is, we're very lateral in how we learn, because we go to our peer network, we go to our friends, we text, we go to, now it's ChatGPT. I mean, that's changed just in the last year here. And we go and learn from that. I think that's great. But at the same time, I do think that there comes wisdom from those who have trod before. I don't think that ChatGPT can show you experience. And so I have been in challenging situations. I flew the SecDef into Afghanistan in 2001 in the first mission, daylight mission into Bagram. And so I did some different things that have given me experience along the way, that now as I face the price challenges that we have, that I face some things like that, it gives me a little bit more confidence that I can do what needs to do to get our organization there. I'm not sure we'll succeed. I'm going to give it my best. But even with all the experience that I have, I'm not sure I'll be there. So to someone younger that I was talking to, is I would just say, go out there and live life. Go out there and live life, experience life, be on the front lines, get your hands dirty, and do the hard work that needs to be done as a young person. I think that I have a sense out there that there's just folks who are just ready, that they're 25 years old and they're ready to be CEO. And that there's just this sense that they can text a lot faster than I can, that they use their two thumbs in ways that I never learned how to do it, and that they can do it straight. But unfortunately, when you're dealing with people, it's not a scientific equation. And I talk about leadership all the time. And I always say the art and science of leadership. And that comes back to my Gonzaga class. And I give the science. And then the second day I give the art, and the art is kind of how you patch it all together. But I would just say that in some ways, I think life is more is 65% art and 35% science when it comes to leadership, because what we're dealing with leadership is the human experience, and the human experience is not a robot. It's not a program, and different people respond in different ways. So for me, I would just give the thing, I would just give the advice to get out there, learn, be patient. Patience is one of the servant leadership characteristics I teach that I'm not very good at, but I do think it's a powerful tool. Be patient, learn all you can, because you're going to need it when you might make a difference in someone's life, in whether or not they're able to retain their job, or whether you make the right decision to hire them, or whatever the case may be. So go out there and learn. Leaves of Grass, Walt Whitman, you know, he talked about you have identity, you have life, and the world, and I'm not saying it exactly right, but the play continues on. What verse will you write? I think we all make a difference in this world. And I think the more experience you have with love, the more experience you have giving back, the more beautiful the verse that you're going to leave on this earth. And so I think that that's our goal in life, is to make a mark that's that never changes and that makes a difference with those around us. But be patient. Some of us make a mark that never leaves at 20 years old, but you can leave a mark at 40, 50, 60 years old as well. And just take time to learn from the best.
What was Rumsfeld like?
So great question.
I bounced around a little bit, but you have my attention there.
I have never been as nervous on that flight. So by the time I took him, he already had the SNL thing of his crazy news conferences, and he already had the reputation of firing generals on the spot. We didn't know what we were doing. And isn't life all about equity and different things like that? So when they formed the crew to go fly the thing, they pulled from all the different squadrons. We were hard crews at the time. We were on alert. We were the operation Enduring Freedom was going on. And I got called in, and I'm looking around. I'm like, who are you all? Like, this, I was the instructor pilot in charge. I'm like, who's my co-pilot? Why are you wearing that 15th? Or I was 15th squadron. Why are you wearing that 17th batch? And it's like, well, I was told to be here. And so we all got together and we all flew across the seas, and we didn't figure out until we got to Germany what we were doing, because they took us into the secret super vault. Because Bin Laden was on the run. It was beginning of December. They thought we were going to get him any day now. They thought we were near Bora Bora. And they wanted to have this big public press splash of Rumsfeld in Afghanistan meeting President Karzai. And I was the IP to bring him in. And again, they wanted all these people to have the credit. So to a leadership thing, for me, that was a challenge, because now all of a sudden I'm flying with this crew I'd never flown before. So I had to figure it out, get the gel together. And that's what pilots get paid the big bucks to do. So I got the crew together. So we showed up, we picked him up in Tbilisi, Georgia, and I saw him, and I'm sitting in the cockpit, and I'm watching him walk up, and all the things that we kind of heard about him, and I'm just like, piecing up. And thankfully, he stayed in the back. I was like, oh, thank God. But at one point, we went down and we met him while we were en route to Afghanistan. We just took a few minutes as a crew. We took turns going down, because we all can't leave the cockpit, obviously. We took turns going down to meet him. And I got to say, he was the nicest man. He had soft blue eyes. He was like a grandpa. I didn't immediately like relax around him, but he was not the persona that I knew. Like, how are you? Nice and stuff like that. Thanks for doing this. And things that we presented him a humanitarian aid package, because we have been dropping airdrop packages of humanitarian aid, that he appreciated that. We wrapped it in a squadron scarf. He appreciated that. I think we took pictures. Again, I wish I had my cell phone back then. I can show it to you right now. It is a picture that's somewhere in a box somewhere that I'll never see again. But anyway, so fast forward, we land successfully. It was so cool. Again, I wish I had my camera, because Karzai came up to the air stairs that came down, and they all met, and there was this huge throng of people, and I just sat there in the cockpit the whole time. He went off, he did his diplomacy for an hour and a half. He came back. Where did he come? The cockpit. Oh, sat on the passenger seat right on the backside of the pilot. Oh my gosh, I was so nervous. I was just like, oh, don't screw up. Not that he knows what you're seeing, but still, it's Rumsfeld. I'm really worried. So go through all the checklists. We actually had a problem on engine start. I had a technique that worked to get the engine started. I'm like, oh, thank you, God. It's just like this. I did not want to have a problem. we took off, and as we were climbing high, I peered over my back shoulder, and he had already fallen asleep. So he fell asleep. Abe came up, tapped him on the shoulder, and we got to attitude. He went to back, he shook my hand, and that was that. So I don't really know him that much. He came across to me like a grandfather, but his reputation was anything but that. Yeah, he definitely, that was an experience of a lifetime.
That's a great story.
Well, where should we go from there? Is there any questions we haven't asked you yet that you want to talk about?
Glad Shane Barnes came up. Again, to everyone listening, I really appreciate Gonzaga University for all that they do, for the servant leadership that they provide this community. Again, I wish Dr. McCullough the best. I think during the COVID times, we were at a very critical time in the pandemic. Things were not going well for us as a society. I actually had 600,000 boxes of cookies to sell. They showed up in March of 2020. It was not a good month to sell cookies. And we ended up selling cookies through August that month. We had tagalongs melting in the sun in July just for you. And it was just a challenging, challenging time. But Gonzaga was stepping out. They were like, no, we're coming back in person. And I remember, you know, we never saw each other that summer, like all in our basements. And I remember running into Dr. McCullough in the Walgreens checkout line on South Hill. And
was he buying candy? I always see him buying.
I think he was.
Yeah.
I think he was. No, I think you're right. But I remember like, Dr. McCullough, how are you? You want a box of Thin Mints? But I just really appreciate you pushing to try to have us be back in person, because Girl Scouts was dying on the vine. We had to sell those cookies. There was 3 million reasons why we had to, and we wouldn't be here if we hadn't gotten them all. So thank you to all the community that bought those cookies. But I just appreciate his upfront leadership, and I appreciate what Gonzaga does. And again, Shane Barnes is that legacy. God bless his family of leaders who go out and give their lives to make the world a better place, but they do it because they have Zag blood in them. So thank you for what you all do to teach Jesuit leadership to everybody, and servant leadership is part of that. And I'm right there out there cheering Go Zags.
Fantastic. And as a one final plug, go buy some Girl Scout cookies, right?
Well, I'm done now.
Next year.
March of 2026. I do not know what the price is going to be, so I will figure that out once I dust off all the stuff to figure out what the price is to be. But it was $5 this year. But thank you for supporting us. And we do have Women's Weekend, which is a great event for women at the beginning of September out at our camp, where you can come out there and do glamping and let us tell you how important you are. So that's something that we have coming on up. But the biggest thing is, if you ever see a Girl Scout in the community, just tell her thanks for what she does. There's not many of them out there. We're 3,000 strong right now, which sounds like a lot, but we're 3,700 strong. I'm selling myself short, but there were 3,700 strong. But when you spread it out across 65,000 square miles, there's not a lot. And so if you see Girl Scouts out there, just tell them thank you. Thank you. And be confident. This world needs girls just like that.
Awesome. Love that. Yeah. Thank you, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the G Suite podcast. This episode was produced and hosted by Andrew Brassage and edited by Ferdinand Dreher. To find more GU Suite podcast episodes and many other podcasts on the Gonzaga Podcast Network, check out gonzaga.edu/podcasts. Thanks again. Und auch nochmal vielen Dank fürs Zuhören von mir auf Deutsch. Dies war der G-Suite Podcast von Andrew Passage, der von Ferdinand Dreher bearbeitet wurde. Vergesst nicht, die anderen Episoden auf gonzaga.edu anzuhören. Nochmals vielen Dank.